You should have a handout, which has a map on one side. We're actually going to start on the back page and the questions at the bottom that say studying 1 Corinthians. And even there, I'm going to delete one question and change it for something else. So the first thing I just want you to have a brief conversation about is how studying and preparing to come and have a discussion about 1 Corinthians will be different to last year. If you were here last year, we were looking at Mark's Gospel. So that's one type of literature in the Bible. This year it's 1 Corinthians. And I think the two questions to talk about, instead of what has changed, let's say what is different about the type of literature. So compared to Mark's Gospel, what is different about the type of literature, and then how will we need to prepare differently? So I hope if you love the other people in your group, then each week you'll want to come prepared and ready with things you've been praying about, things you want to say, questions you've got about the passage. But how will that be different this year in 1 Corinthians compared to last year in Mark's Gospel? Does that make sense? So have a go at that for a few minutes in the tables, and then we'll get some ideas from around the room. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm going to repeat that. So it's a letter, so in a sense, it's like having half a conversation. Paul is responding to specific issues, and actually also, you'll see, to things that they've written to him and asked about. Yeah. So what will that mean for our preparation?
Well, I think you just have to pay attention to the potential context.
Brilliant. Yeah, so we need to pay attention to the context where they are rather than just reading it straight. Thank you very much. Very helpful. Thank you. We can always come back to that group, but let's move on to this group over here. Anything?
It's a letter rather than a story. So it's an argument rather than a narrative. It's written after Jesus has returned, has ascended into heaven before his return. So it's in a different stage of the Bible story, and we used to look at that differently.
Thank you. Shall I repeat those? So two differences, I think, so far. So it's not a story, it's not a narrative, it's a letter, which means it's an argument, and also the Bible storyline has moved on since Mark. So Jesus has risen, ascended, and we're in the era of the church being founded and growing. Yeah. And what does that mean for preparation, either of those things? Thank you. So for our preparation, it will help enormously if we've thought about the line of argument before we come. Some of them are fairly detailed or tightly argued, and paying close attention to words. So if you come with a sort of written summary, these books are very good. So these £3, you get the text on one side and a blank page on the other. And if you came each week with a paraphrase in your own words of what you think Paul's argument is, that would be a very helpful starting point for the groups each week. Thank you. Anything down here? Or same as what's been said?
We were going to say exactly that.
Actually. Exactly that. No, very good. Good answer. Anything over here? Thank you. Yeah, very important. So in Mark, written to Christians and non-Christians, often the applications were repent and believe, sort of big, broad scope. This is to a group of Christians, and as we said here, a group of Christians with specific issues. Thank you. That's very, very helpful. Good. Well, turn back to the beginning of the handout, and we'll go straight into their specific issues. So if you know anything about 1 Corinthians, you may know that they were a church with a lot of problems. So we're just going to see if we can gather some of those problems as the first thing. So what I'm going to do is give each table 4 chapters. And what I suggest is that within your table, you divide up maybe into corners of the table and have a chapter each. So if I can give Jeff, give you chapters 1 to 4. If Simon and Rachel, can we have chapters 5 to 8 there? Chapters, I can't do the maths, 9 to whatever the next number is, 12? Is that right? Yes. And then 13 to 16 over here. And then in a couple of minutes, you'll see I put a church with many problems, so a list of the problems, and then a harder question, maybe come back together from your corners. Can you work out which of those problems are symptoms only and which ones are root causes? What's the disease as opposed to what are the symptoms? Does that make sense? That's a harder question. Good. I'll give you a good 5 to 10 minutes for that. Are we ready to look round? And let's see if we can make a bit of a list, first of all. So if we're able to go chapter by chapter, maybe just one word per chapter of the problem. You might need more than one, but who was chapter one?
Division.
Division, thank you. Chapter two? Doesn't have to, might not be a new problem.
Yep, still division.
Same, divisions, lots of divisions. Chapter three, chapter four?
Party spirit, division.
Party spirit, division. Trying to divide the apostles. Okay, so pretty divided table over here. It's good. Also division. Okay, let's have five.
Pride.
Thank you. Yeah. Anything else in five?
Sexual immorality.
Yeah, sexual immorality of so serious a kind that even the surrounding non-Christian pagan city thinks it's terrible. Yep, thank you. Chapter 6. Wrong view of the body. Wrong view of the body. And we, again, I don't know if, what has that led them to doing? Sexual immorality again. So, and there's actually something else in 6 as well. And lawsuits. So imagine Thursday night Central Focus in Corinth. You might have, you know, everyone would meet for a Bible study like this. They'd pray, and then they'd say, see you tomorrow in court, because that's where they were. Or they'd say, some of us tonight are off for a social. There's one group going to the pub for a beer, and the other group are going to the prostitutes. Where do you want to go tonight? Who are you going to join? So that was Corinth. Good. Chapter 7. Thank you. Marriage, remarriage. Did you say divorce? Do you get unmarried? Did you say that?
Probably.
But yeah. And do you have sex and change of status? Thank you very much. Did you have 8 as well? Yes. Nothing in 8. We're not sure. That's all right, because 9 and 10 are a lot like 8. So this group can pick that up. 9 and 10. Thank you. Yeah, freedom, your rights, the authority of an apostle. Thank you. Anything else if we move into 10? Yeah, there's a whole complicated situation with the local religions and the food that was offered there and the temples. Thank you. 11? Thank you. Role of women. So there's a confusion about what women are and aren't allowed to do in church. And then not just confusion over the Lord's Supper. Again, if I give you the picture, imagine this was Center Focus again. So the people who turn up early would be the ones who were rich enough not to need to go to work so they can get here early. But they didn't just turn up early. They turn up early with a picnic. And not just a picnic, but a really good picnic that would display their wealth to everyone else there. So they'd unload their hamper, and that meant that they would be drunk by the time the poorer people who had to get jobs arrived. So you'd have the richer people with their picnic and their drunkenness with the poorer people arriving, and as if that wasn't bad enough, it was the Lord's Supper, and as if that wasn't bad enough, they were doing it deliberately to show off how rich they were. That was the goal, was to humiliate the people with less money. So that's the church in Corinth. Thank you. Chapter 12. Do you get as far as chapter 12?
So, yeah, kind of spiritual gifts and kind of value of self over others.
Thank you. I'm better than you because my spiritual gift is more exciting than yours, was roughly how they saw things. Great. 13.
A lack of maturity causing them to prioritize spiritual gifts and showing things over hardworking, unseen love.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's see if I can remember all that. So a lack of maturity means they prioritize gifts and showy things over serving each other because they don't have love. Thank you very much. 14.
A lack of understanding what it is to build up the church.
Thank you. Lack of understanding what it is to build up the church. If you went to church in Corinth, what would it be like?
It would be a lot of speaking in tongues, a lot of outward show.
Thank you. So a lot of outward show, a lot of speaking in tongues. You also get the impression it's just total chaos. That not only are they doing those things, but they're doing them over the top of each other and whenever they want and in a sort of, yeah, great. 15. Thank you. Okay, good list. I'm not going to remember all of those. So apathy, that was one of them. Baptism, don't believe the resurrection, not sure what happens when you die. Very good. Thank you. Let's just throw in 16.
Maybe not very hospitable.
Maybe not very hospitable. Okay, so that is quite a list of problems, isn't it? Quite a good list of problems. Did anyone have any ideas about the root cause? Did you have long enough to get to that in your groups? Do you want one more minute? So one more minute to see if your table can agree on the root cause.
Maybe sort of a faith that isn't a very sort of living faith. There's an apathy to their faith that doesn't drive them.
Thank you. A faith that isn't a living faith, that is an apathy. So it doesn't drive them to action. Thank you. I think that's very interesting. You were the back end of the book, weren't you? Yeah, okay, that's very interesting. Yeah, thank you. Let's go over here.
Pride.
Thank you. So pride, which led to division. Thank you very much.
A mindset which focuses on here and now, the present age, where it should be focusing on the world to come.
Thank you. Mindset focused on the here and now, not on the future. David wants to add.
I think it's a basic misunderstanding of what holiness.
Thank you. So they think they're holy when they're not, or they just don't care. Yeah, they don't understand holiness and what it is. Thank you very much.
We think that the Corinthians have pushed the cross to the side and Jesus to the side and filled that gap with worldliness.
Thank you. Pushed Jesus and the cross to the side, filled the gap with worldliness. Okay, thank you. That is a very good list. You can see, I think those were all different, weren't they, around the room. There was some overlap, but lots different. We will come back through the weeks, but you'll see a church with many problems. I'm just going to add one or two things by way of background on the rest of this side of the sheet. And then I'll give you my suggestion of the root cause and the structure of the letter on the other side. But other things about their background that we learn in the letter, they're a mixture of Jews and Gentiles. We get that in chapter 7, and we know that from Acts 18, that Paul was evangelizing for a year and a half, actually. He was with them, and some from the synagogue, but lots and lots of Gentiles. Lots of them come from pagan backgrounds and immoral backgrounds by Jewish terms. And they were a range of social status as well. Slave to free and rich to poor, all mixed together in this church. Then I've put in the box, just to help you with something that may come up during the year, is to clear up the various different visits and letters that went on. So here is a timeline. In Acts chapter 18, Paul brings them to the gospel for the very first time. That is in 50 AD, and he stays there for a year and a half. Apart from Paul's home base, That is the almost the longest time he spends anyway. He spends slightly longer in Ephesus, but a year and a half. Paul is teaching them, training them, giving them the foundations. So you'd think they would be a church sort of solidly rooted, mature, clear on what holiness is, knowing sort of Jesus and the cross, ready for anything. But quite quickly, it's clear there are problems. And Paul writes to them letter A, which is a letter referred to in 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9. And it was clearly a bit of a stinker, letter A, because we don't have it anymore. And it looks like the Corinthians quietly shredded it and put it in the bin and made sure that no one else would ever have it. So we don't know what was in the letter except what we can pick up. That isn't a problem for the Bible. We have in the New Testament everything that God intended us to have. And we don't have and don't need letter A. But there was a letter A. Then after letter A, we have ongoing chuntering, ongoing traffic between the Corinthians and Paul. So Chloe's people, if you just look at chapter 1, verse 11, it says, "For it has been reported to me by Chloe's people that there is quarreling among you, my brothers." So the divisions that this group was talking about, you've got to imagine that we're in one big room when the letter is being read out. We're excited. We're having a letter from Paul the Apostle. We hope this time it'll be a happier letter. He'll be more pleased with us. As he starts reading, he says, "I have a report from Chloe's people." Yeah, and Chloe is sitting just over there. So as that said, they're all turning to look at Chloe. "Oh, you didn't. Oh, why did you tell him that?" So that's what's going on as the letter's being read. But also, they wrote to him, big list of questions, and Paul has had some interactions, some people have come and visited him. So then, with all those reports, he sits down and writes 1 Corinthians, the letter that we're reading here, 53 or 54 AD. And lots of it is structured around those reports and those questions that they had asked. So a lot of it is a series of episodes and topics. And that came up, didn't it, as we went round. There's the bit about idol worship. There's lots about sex. There's stuff about divisions and spiritual gifts. And it's sort of issue by issue by issue because they've written to him. And then he goes to visit them, the second visit. And when we hear about this in 2 Corinthians, it is called the painful visit. So Paul goes to visit them, and it doesn't go smoothly. There are fallings out, and Paul has to call them to order. And so that they didn't enjoy very much. But things were left so that they were expecting a third visit. But it didn't happen. And part of 2 Corinthians is Paul explaining why it didn't happen. He didn't want to go and just kind of punch them in the face again. But they're very upset that he didn't come, and that there's more backwards and forwards about that. And then after a bit longer, he writes 2 Corinthians, letter C. So that's the history. Just a little bit of geography. Since we're doing history, we may as well do both GCSEs. So a bit of geography. You've got a map there of where Corinth is. So if you look at the map of Greece, Corinth is right in the middle. And the important thing to notice is it is in the middle at the place where Greece narrows down to a tiny, tiny, narrow bit of land. It's 6.5 kilometers across that isthmus of land, joining the northern blob of Greece to the southern blob of Greece. And that means that Corinth is in the most perfect position for trading. So in the days when sea travel was dangerous and took a long time and was costly, by far the best thing to do if you were going from west to east or the other way around was to land your ship at one side of the isthmus and carry your cargo 6 kilometers to the other side, put it back on another ship, and then you sail off towards Rome or wherever in safety and much, much more easily. Which means that if you own the isthmus, you are quids in. So you can charge people tax for coming across, and you can open a market there to sell everything coming from the east, everything coming from the west, north and south, and ideas as well. It's a place where people met with lots of different ideas, and they traded those as well. And also, like any major port city, it had a reputation for immorality as well, for brothels and all the rest of it. So that was Corinth, sort of major, major melting pot. Major exchange of ideas. And we'll see some of that in the letter. Okay, turn the page. And here is my suggestion of the problem and also of how the letter works. So if you turn to chapter 1, verse 26. Chapter 1, verse 26. And you get a description of the church, or most of them. Paul says, "For consider your calling, brothers." In other words, how they were before they became Christians. "Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish. And God chose what is weak. God chose what is low and despised, even things that are not, to bring to nothing the things that are." So that's who they were socially in terms of status. They were the low, the despised, the nothings, the foolish, the weak. They weren't wise or strong or noble. And also, if you were to look on in chapter 6, you get a list of how they've been living, which in Greek culture would have been okay, but in Jewish culture was not at all. And now they're reading the Bible and they're realizing how they're not living up to God's standards in the past. But idolatry, temple worship, but also adultery and other sexual sins, also thieves and greedy and drunkards, revilers, swindlers. And they are like that, of sort of low status, in a world that really values outward show and wealth and power and status. So they are the bottom drawer socially in a city that is wealthy and values wisdom particularly, but also money and power. So they have an insecurity problem, is my suggestion. But they react to their insecurity not by being humble and lowly. They react to it by being proud. The word that comes again and again and again is puffed up. So they inflate a sort of balloon of self-image around themselves. They're constantly boasting about how good they are, not because they really are very good, but because they feel insecure about what they're really like. Again, probably you have met people like this, people at work, people you've known, where it's their insecurity that causes them to push themselves forward all the time. That's my suggestion. That's what's going on. So that's why they talk about being rich or kings. That's why they've got the divisions. So actually the divisions are mainly focused on a leader. Each group chooses a leader, and they want a leader to make them feel better about themselves. Even if we are poor and weak and not very clever, look at our leader. Our leader is brilliant, and he talks so well, and he's intellectual, and he's got these qualifications. That's the way they're trying to make themselves feel better. The same, somebody said pride for chapter 5, you're absolutely right. They have this crazy sexual immorality, but they boast about it. They're proud about it. They're proud of their knowledge. They're proud of their gifts. And actually, in each major section, the key word puffed up comes, and I put the references on the sheet there. And I think that's telling us this is going right through the letter. So the group that said pride, I think you were very much, you're agreeing with me. I think they're proud because they're insecure. That's part of what's going on. Okay, then below that, I've given you a suggested structure. It's a big book, and this is to sort of give you a map through it. Please feel free to tear this apart in the groups as we go through the weeks. Lots of different episodes, lots of different topics, but my suggestion is that we get a problem at the beginning, followed by sort of further examples through the episodes as we go on, and then at the very end of the book, we get the solution, the answer to the problem in chapter 15. So problem, further examples, and then the solution. And what we'll try and do through the year as we go, we'll try and fill in the blanks there on the sheets. So sort of summary of the problem, summary of what's going on with factions and sects and rites and church, and summary of the solution. So that may give you a sort of helpful map. The other thing that might be helpful to do as we go through, you might find it helpful to read chapter 15, particularly if you are planning to sort of prepare week by week as you go through the letter, as well as doing that, because we're not actually going to get to chapter 15 until June, which might be a bit late for if that's the solution. So you might just want to start reading chapter 15 earlier in the year, so that as well as the problems, you're getting a look at what anyway I think is the solution. Okay, I'd like now to put us back into the groups for a little bit with the next couple of questions on the sheets, which are, I think, just from what we've said so far, particularly the problems we've talked about, you may have noticed ways in which Corinth was a lot like London. The things around status and show and intellectual pretension and confusion about sex and a whole load of other ways. So my question for the groups is that good or bad, the similarity? What will be the advantages and also the dangers of studying a book that seems to have been written to a place with a lot of similarities to us and London? Does that make sense? Advantages and disadvantages. And I'll give you 5 minutes to look at that in the groups. Should we do a sort of nodding straw poll first of all? Do we think it was mainly good or mainly bad? Mainly good? Mainly bad? No, that felt like mainly good from the... Should we start here again? So, advantages, disadvantages?
One of the things we said was it reminds you that the challenges we face are not unique to us.
Yeah, and that's a good thing, yeah. Reminds us the challenges we face are not unique to us. So, actually, as we find similar things here, knowing that a church founded by an apostle, led by him personally for a year and a half, within only 3 or 4 years of that moment, could be in this much trouble, in some ways is encouraging, isn't it? Yeah, thank you. Let's come over here.
We thought one potential disadvantage is that it can be too easy to read off the problems which Corinth has got and the answers which Paul gives as if they are identical to ours,
yeah.
Whereas they are similar, but they require some considerable thought to work out how they apply to us in our somewhat different circumstances.
Thank you. Do everyone hear that? So, because they are similar, we might read them off as identical without thinking about how our situation isn't entirely the same as that. So you think, okay, they've got a problem with wisdom. Their wisdom must be the same as our wisdom. Brilliant, we're done. Without actually thinking how it worked in their culture, how it works differently in ours, so that we can get the right application. So ideally, there will be lots of easy talk about application. It's a very practical book. It's full of practical issues. But we don't want to make the mistake of assuming too quickly that we're the same as them precisely. Yeah, thank you very much.
I think sort of following on from that is that some of the stuff that we mightn't think applies to us at all, so we just sort of glance over it, sort of things like food items and, sorry, food.
Yes.
And head coverings, that sort of thing.
Thank you. And there'll be a few things in there that at first glance appear to have no referent in our culture. Jeff's two examples were the food sacrifice to idols and the head coverings. Though actually, there are a large number of women who live in London who wear head coverings every day. They just happen to be Muslims. And there are parts of the world where head covering is entirely normal. And there are global cultures where offering food to ancestors or to statues and idols is entirely normal. And again, lots of those cultures are here in London. Before we've even looked for the equivalent of food sacrifice to idols within Western British culture. But yes, there'll be things we may have to work harder at. Thank you. Okay, I'm coming back to this group. Thank you. That's very helpful. I'll repeat that. So we could leave at the end of this year with a series of rules related to the symptoms. So now I know how to not do law courts with other Christians. Great. And now I know how to not sacrifice food to idols. Great. Rather than looking at the root causes and at the big things the letter is saying. That's very helpful. And we'll try. We've got quite a few review nights booked in this year, so we'll try and keep coming back to that and how the whole book works together. Thank you. Let me give you one other advantage or disadvantage, depending how you feel. But I think from the list of problems, you can feel that this is going to be a book with some challenges in it for us. If London is a lot like Corinth, and the Corinthian church had become a lot like the world around them, it would not be surprising if St. Helens had taken on board some of the culture of London on some of these things. And so actually, we might find week by week, both as a good thing, this would be good for us, but potentially it'll make each evening maybe even painful, but certainly challenging, will be that we'll find things that we need help with that Paul is putting his finger on. Good. Thank you very much. I hope that's been a useful introduction to 1 Corinthians. I want us to turn to prayer now around the groups. So why not begin praying for things that come out of 1 Corinthians, maybe out of your reading of the book already, anything you see. I put some questions at the bottom, things that might have challenged or reassured you, or maybe just praying for things we've said tonight and our study of 1 Corinthians specifically. So why not pray for that for a bit, and then in 5 or 6 minutes, I'll bob up briefly to encourage you to pray for each other specifically. And if you might want to share one or two things, you might already know each other so well that you can pray straight away, but to pray for each other then. Okay. David, go on. Yeah. Yes, certainly. The box at the bottom right, I decided to skip over. Happy to say more afterwards, but that just to say we need to be cautious about what we know about Corinth from ancient classical authors and archaeology. So I've put a few details down on there. It was destroyed, then it was refounded as a Roman colony. But there's a lot we don't know, because so much of the history of that period has been destroyed. So actually what we know reliably is in the letter of 1 Corinthians, and we can add helpful things. There's helpful things about head coverings, actually, that will help us when we get to chapter 11. But we don't know everything. So the example I put on there is the verb to Corinthianize was a Greek verb that meant to be sexually immoral. So if you had been Corinthian, it meant you'd been sexually immoral. But that verb relates to the Greek city that was destroyed in 146 BC. So we don't actually know for certain whether that was still current when Paul was writing his letter. It might be that the Roman colony had a different reputation. So we've got to be a bit careful with extra-biblical information. Does that help? I'm happy to say more afterwards. Thank you. Let's turn to prayer.